This is Unmasked, the Stigma of Meth. I'm Nick Ciano. This episode will be a little bit different from what we've done previously. We'll be going through a former meth user's history with the drug, not from behind bars, but from here in the studio. However, she asked that we modulate her voice to protect her privacy. For this episode, I'm joined with...
Felicia Donaldson. Hello.
And we're going to be working together to help tell this story.
I moved to Muncie in 1976, stayed here till I graduated from high school in 1985. And then after high school, I knew I was going to take time off before I started college. So I moved to Arizona, Prescott, where my brother lived, stayed there and worked and partied for a year and supported myself.
She got tired of that pretty quickly and moved to California. There, she met up with the guy who would end up being her boyfriend. He, along with a friend of his, introduced her to meth.
But before we get there, she took us through a timeline of her history with all sorts of drugs. And if you've heard the episode where we have audio from a number of interviews with inmates, the histories sound pretty similar.
Let's see. I started drinking when I was 8 years old.
They lived in Europe, so she said it wasn't a big deal. When they moved to Indiana...
Probably in middle school was the first time I smoked pot. And then through high school, I experimented with a lot of other things. You know, I'd be at a party, and if it said, do not mix with alcohol, I would take them. And I tried cocaine for the first time when I was 16.
She moved around a bit after high school before calling up her best friend to see if she could move out to California with her.
So her and her boyfriend, another guy, picked me up from the airport, and they were both in the Navy, and they were both meth dealers. And so that's how that started.
This would be her first foray into using meth.
I was 18, and we just started right off the bat. They had basically had meth that was straight from the dealers.
She said that 30 years ago, meth was a lot more potent.
And since they were getting their supply with nearly no middlemen involved, it was very pure.
So you could do a line of meth versus a line of coke, and the line of meth might keep you up for a day and not want to eat for 2 days or a day. But it also burned really bad when it went up your nose.
It was her, her friend, and their boyfriends in a little studio apartment, staying up all night doing lines. The thought behind her using was simple.
My whole idea of doing it was, I'm just going to do it so I can lose some weight. So I'm going to do a little bit of meth every day, not eat as much, and lose weight. And then, so we would be up most of the night, and then I worked at a job from 12 in the afternoon to 8 o'clock at night in a nursing home working in food services. So I went, you know, we would stay up all night, and then I would walk to my job, do my job, come back, and do more meth.
Drug use ran deep in their small circle. Mementos that she still holds on to today have clear evidence of that.
I have a picture when, because my girlfriend and her boyfriend got married, and I rented a limo as their gift. And there's a picture of him in his tux, you know, sitting there. You know, we were all just doing lines, and that's just what we did.
But to them, it was completely normal.
It was just the lifestyle. I wasn't doing it to hide from life. I was working, you know, and in your mind, it's like a functional alcoholic or what have you. You know, you're working, you're going to work, you're doing your meth at night or your meth during the day or do a little meth before you go to work. And so my mindset looking back, even though I was very young, I didn't really see anything wrong with it.
This was their life, completely normal to them.
Until her boyfriend's family called him to come home.
So he said, okay, so he flew home. Unbeknownst to him, they were doing an intervention.
She wrote him a letter explaining that meth was just a 3-month deal to her. He came back just for her and flew with her to Colorado. He left her to go to rehab in South Dakota.
Then I stayed in Colorado for a month and partied with his brothers.
So, done with meth.
But not everything else for the time being.
She started college with her boyfriend and made a friend her first year.
We were at school and I met a girlfriend of mine named Jody. And we decided to go to California for spring break.
Spring break rolls around, and the two find their way out to California.
And I had already connected with my drug dealer there. Her name was Rena. And I wanted to introduce Jody to meth. I mean, I hadn't done it in like 3 months or whatever, 4 months. And I thought, you know, this is going to be fun. We're going to go to California, do a little meth.
They got 4 grams, if her memory serves her correctly. It was a rough first day, and they said they got so
methed out
that they missed out on a taping of Johnny Carson that her father got them tickets for. And that hit close to home for her.
So then the other ironic thing about this is that my dad is a DEA agent for the government.
The Drug Enforcement Administration. He was there on business with his wife.
We went to their hotel, and they were trying to get us to eat, but when you're on meth, you can't eat. And so we were like, you know, and Jody was even more wigged out than I was because she had never done it before. And so they couldn't understand, you know, oh, eat, you know, I hadn't seen him in a year or whatever.
So they missed out on Johnny Carson, but they went to Disneyland.
I just remember being really aggressive. We pulled like Mickey Mouse away from these children so we could get a picture. Just, you know, really, you know, bizarre behavior.
After a week in the Golden State, they headed back to the airport with a few grams of meth and a baggie of marijuana to take back home.
Their dealer dropped them off.
And I'm like, Jody, I don't feel right. She's like, come on, come on, we got to make our plane. And I said, take my purse. You know, I felt weak and I just felt everything closing in. And I thought, if I get on this plane, you know, I'm going to have a heart attack. I'm going to die. You know, you don't know what's going to happen. And so we get on the, we're waiting to get on the plane. We get on the plane and we're halfway. I mean, we're boarding and I'm like, Jody. And I turn around and I told the flight attendants that I was afraid to fly.
They didn't let her fly back. An ambulance arrived a few minutes later.
They called the ambulance and I told them exactly what I'd done. It probably been I hadn't eaten for 4 days and I hadn't slept for 3 days. And I told them it was pure uncut meth. And, you know, they're on the thing, you know, blood pressure's dropping, you know, heartbeat's really high.
Her family is there. She said she could barely look at her father.
I think, oh my God, you know, if something happens to me, how devastating this would be for my father. And, you know, I would just be another statistic. I'm just another statistic.
And then the doctor comes in.
And I said, what is going on? Am I going to die? Am I going to die? And he looks me square in the eye. He goes, what are you afraid of? All you do is close your eyes and go to sleep.
That probably saved her life, she said.
Because I never felt like the lowest piece of scum in the world.
She was only 19 at this time. It only took a few hours, and she and her friend will be back on their way to the airport.
That moment sobered her attitude toward meth immediately. But her friend's attitudes remained unchanged.
You know, get home the next day, and my boyfriend and her boyfriend and her sat and did lines in front of me, but I never touched it again.
She said there were so many emotions she's felt about it since then.
It was too fresh for me that she even kept it. You know, it's you don't want to say it's insulting because you can't impress your beliefs and feelings onto somebody else, but you would think after that experience that there'd be a respect enough to say, hey, you know, do you want to leave or we'll do this later or, you know, what do you think?
Since she wasn't a cooker, it took her a while to learn about what she was putting into her body. In fact, it took her a trip to rehab to realize what she was doing.
After I overdosed, basically in 2 weeks, or it was actually 10 days, there was just a downward spiral.
She and her boyfriend who introduced her to meth broke up. She tried outrunning a police officer. She got a DUI.
Then I was basically ready to kill myself. And so then I ended up going to rehab in North Dakota. And that was extremely beneficial for me.
As you might imagine, it wasn't all smooth sailing in rehab.
I knew my life was going nowhere quick. And when I had to call my dad when I was in rehab and ask for his insurance information, you know, and here he's been working his whole life against drugs.
She said she spent about 30 days in rehab.
I felt on top of the world when I got out. I got out in like May 1st or the beginning of May. And then I started school here in that fall. And like I went to meetings every day and I walked everywhere and I was the happiest I'd ever been, actually, that year, that first year.
But this wasn't the end of her story with meth. After she started a family, settled down, got a job, someone very near to her became addicted. We'll be diving a little deeper into that in a second episode. But for now, that's it for this episode. If you have any questions or comments, or you just want to reach out to us, you can email us at unmaskedbsu@gmail.com. I'm Nick Ciano.
I'm Felicia Donaldson.
Thanks for listening.